Good morning. This is Audrey Niffenegger, author of The Time Traveler's Wife, and you are listening to Sandwiches at Irregular Hours. I'll see you in the future.
Good morning! Welcome to Sandwiches at Irregular Hours, episode 150 for February 9th, 2021. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Essenflow.
And I'm Pam Bedard.
150 episodes of Sandwiches at Irregular Hours. Let's celebrate. That's pretty amazing that we got this far.
I can't believe it's been that many episodes. That seems crazy.
Oh, we think this is a double-sized issue, isn't it, Steve?
I think this is a double-sized issue. This is going to be a two-hour podcast, so everybody who's driving, make sure you're driving in circles before you get to school today, because this is going to take a while. We are still discussing Recursion by Blake Crouch. Today we've got books 2 and 3, and the science fiction has become scary, and the psychology is even darker in this section, huh?
And the notions of time. Like, how does time work? How does our experience of time work? This question of whether time is like a real thing or just something that is perceived through human perception, it's just such a fascinating question. It seems to be at the center of this novel, which I'm really, really enjoying.
This book is so good. And you're absolutely right. I threw on my Birkenstocks. I was sitting down in my meditation pose as I sat there and listened to this sort of this exploration of what is reality and how do we know what is.
That's book 2 and 3 for sure.
So when Slate says to Helena, "There is no past. Now is just an illusion." And he's able to say that because he has been playing with time so much through this technology that Helena's created that for him, like, now is an illusion. So if you start thinking about, like, now is an illusion, but I know that right now the three of us are talking to each other and creating a podcast. How could that be an illusion?
Well, you know, is it Bill or is it Ted who'd say, whoa?
It might be both, Chip.
This is very deep philosophy of how humans think and how humans experience time here. If this character went back, his consciousness went back in time 11 years and he got the chance to live those 11 years over again, is that all illusion to him still? Is he seeing it as truth? He has a very interesting conversation about falling into the groove of your reality. And just, you just do it. It just becomes reality because there is no alternative.
Well, even as we were coming out of the primal muck, that gets addressed of when we start perceiving and how we perceive what is time, what is now. I mean,
whoa.
I <know. laughs> Hey, I've got a lava lamp going. I just want to let you know.
And it's also such an interesting take on, well, not immortality exactly, but extending one lifespan, right? So that instead of extending one's lifespan, where, like, I was born in 1972. So one might expect to live to 2072 if one's optimistic. And then what if I could extend another 100 years? Here, it's like you extend the lifespan by continually reliving 2000 to 2020. Oh, and then that's a good time to turn around and head back. So like Slate lives way, 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 way more years because of the tech, but he's still stuck in that whatever year he was born, like 1980 through 2030. Like, he's stuck in his own lifespan, but experiencing multiple times. So it's kind of a cool concept of that intersection between time travel and immortality, two of the great desires of humans.
And this is maybe like where if you took Bill Murray's Groundhog Day, and not that that doesn't have a dark element to it, but you made it more of an action thriller. Mm-hmm. And it really explored, I guess, what that concept could mean and where you could make a different choice or something could change that could benefit you or not benefit you. I mean, we eventually learned the rules of this.
And the metaphor is extended even further with the rules, because in order to go back to a previous consciousness, to replace your consciousness in the past, you have to die in your current timeline. You have to, that extension of your life has to start with the extinguishing of your life. That's an interesting metaphor that Blake Crouch has brought us there.
Well, and it's the way that he avoids the time travel paradoxes that a lot of science fiction writers struggle with, where you meet yourself.
Because it's all alternative timelines at that point.
Right. It was interesting that Audrey Niffenegger's time traveler's wife is one of the few really good sci-fi novels that I've seen where the meeting of the self is treated in a way that's logical, but also really emotionally satisfying. And so Crouch avoids that whole issue of meeting of the self.
Because your consciousness replaces your consciousness in the past, and you get to live that life over. And we see that happen in a scene in this book where Helena actually sets herself a video game style restart point so that she can jump back to that point if stuff goes south. And that's exactly what happens. And we have the narrator seeing this from Barry's point of view, as, and then her eyes were different. She was a different consciousness all of a sudden. That's wonderful.
And it's really great that when she sets that point, it's a point of trauma. So I think throughout this novel and throughout a lot of time travel, temporality is totally connected to trauma. It's those moments of bodily or emotional trauma that allow us to transcend time. And we kind of know that intuitively because we know how fast a movie goes compared to dental surgery. Right. And so when our body is being traumatized, time slows down. If you're in a lot of pain, 10 minutes can take a heck of a long time. Whereas if you're experiencing something really pleasurable, it goes by in a snap. And so I think he uses trauma as a way to separate the timelines. And that makes perfect sense.
That's wonderful.
And for those who do not understand the video game analogy that Steve threw out, when playing a game, many times when you're getting ready to do something that could be risky, you'll save at that moment and then go and do that risky thing, knowing that you could fail. And then you would come back and you'd restart the game right before you'd start that.
Mm-hmm. And to put that into a real life situation like this, to say, I think what I'm going to do is fraught with risk, and I think that I have the power to jump back to this point. I love this writing.
And it's such a fantasy, right? Like do-over. It's very much a lot of the books we've been reading in this book club, and we didn't create a theme. We just each picked books we thought the others would enjoy. We saw this in Flash Forward, the idea of the do-over. We saw this in Time Traveler's Wife, the idea of going back and forth. So it's something that's really on our minds, I think. And I think that's partly because as we have made it through 2020, which felt like the longest year ever, people are talking about temporality a lot. I feel like it is a real question. And we're doing so much great science, both in physics and psychology, on how we perceive time, and then the sort of more complicated, I don't understand it as well, quantum notions of time in physics. So there's lots of really great work being done here.
And I think Blake Crouch was definitely writing about the time that he was in when he was writing this. I think that we are looking here at a study of what does it mean to have memories? What does it mean to have facts? And what happens when your facts don't measure up to reality? Can you really, truly believe facts? Because I think that some history was happening when Blake Crouch was writing this with the word fact and the word fake.
Well, you know. Exactly. I mean, it was written in 2019. If you've watched any cable network, you've certainly watched Spin, and the idea of where you're pulling your facts, your reality from. And even, I mean, today, with many of the people pulling out of the QAnon movement, really coming to terms that, you know, you can jump down a rabbit hole and continue to fall down that rabbit hole and never be able to pull yourself up. But maybe if you could find, you know, some kind of wake-up moment where you could once again join what we would call traditional society, I guess.
To get out of the recursion? Is that what you're trying to say, Chip?
I could be saying that.
Now, did you guys like the epigraph to book 3 by Ray Cummings? Time is what keeps everything from happening at once. I love the idea of time as, like, instead of being something that we have no control over, time is going so fast. How am I already in my late 40s? That's crazy. Just thinking, like, time is an organizing factor so that you can think it gives chronology or it gives, like, structure to our lives and our experiences. It's kind of great.
But does it really, man?
It's an illusion. Time is an illusion. Lunchtime, doubly so. The idea of time, I've been studying time all my life. This is my obsession, is time travel stories and just time in general. Schedules are my thing that I am obsessed with. And yes, I really believe that we humans are consciously going through a chronology, a timeline, but that is just a human thing that doesn't really truly exist. Well, that's how I truly believe.
You got this linear idea that things are moving, and how simple of us, right?
I absolutely believe that. I believe that we don't understand the true nature of time and the idea of past, present, and future. And we are simple creatures going through linear progressions.
It's something that could potentially be far more expansive, less understanding.
And I love that our conversations about time always move between the philosophical and the pop cultural. It makes perfect sense to think about Plato's Allegory of the Cave, which Blake Crouch brings up, and Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure at the same time, because these are just two ways into that same human conundrum. How does time work, right?
I technically didn't say Doctor Who yet, but right. Doctor Who, timey-wimey, wibbly-wobbly ball of stuff. That's right. What time is. There.
Now, in Blake Crouch's novel, I really like, at the beginning of book 2, at the end of book 1, we have this idea of false memory syndrome, and we kind of we have some suspicions about how it works, but we don't really know. And false memory syndrome is revealed, like the mechanism behind it is revealed a little bit by the sudden appearance of a huge building in the New York City skyscape. Now, I thought that was really, really brilliant. And perhaps it's because lately I've been rewatching a 1990s sitcom called Friends, which actually, like, young people love this sitcom. And, like, so I'm watching it with my kids. And you guys know this show, right?
Absolutely.
Yes, I've heard of it.
Every person knows this show, too.
Yes, quite
it's
possibly.
A show that I used to watch occasionally in college. I don't remember it so well. So it's, you know, it's a rewatch. But the Twin Towers are right there in the skyscape. They have, like, this kind of shot that they use a lot, and there are the towers. And that idea, there's something about the fact that Crouch in 2019 places this big city, this big building in the skyscape, which is so familiar. And because New York City, as we talked about last time, is such a center of finance as well as entertainment, it's sort of part of the American hegemony, is that very recognizable skyscape. So what did you guys think of that? That notion of the appearance of this building.
And the fact that it's got two towers that are connected with a curve, mm-hmm, is certainly reminiscent of the World Trade Center. Absolutely.
Yeah. So what's he doing with that? Let's pause and discuss.
Is it any different than the monoliths that keep showing up all over the world? Yeah. Where it becomes this incredible spectacle of, like, it's It wasn't there, and now it's there. The change is dramatic.
And not only that, but all of the memories that went along with it. It just arrived just now, and at the same time, it's always been there. We've visited there so many times. I have suddenly all of these memories of going there and it being a part of my life. What is the message of this science fiction here?
And I think in part what's interesting about this moment is that up to this point in recursion, you have people individually processing what they're calling false memory syndrome. And sometimes they'll tell you, like he tells you in the first book, like a whole bunch of people remember the same wedding. How weird. But here you have this cultural moment where like all of New York City and, oh yeah, all of the US, because that skyscape is so iconic, suddenly comes to this same moment of shared consciousness together. And I think that because September 11th, 2001 is such a national trauma in the popular imaginary, in the popular memory, it makes perfect sense to do the opposite. Instead of the disappearance of iconic buildings, the appearance of iconic buildings, and to think, how would that work? It's a sort of hopeful moment in my mind, even though he's really looking at the dark parts of this time travel technology.
You mentioned that as this pillar, but I'm reminded of this idea that if you're 18 years old or younger, this isn't. Other than it's just history to those people. Mm-hmm. They weren't part of that.
Mm-hmm.
The ones I'm watching Friends with, they have no idea why I am always like, the Twin Towers are there.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
They don't have that same emotional scar from that moment that we all remember that moment so clearly. And the magic trick here to do the reverse and have all of the emotion of these wonderful memories that they suddenly have a flood of. That's kind of cool that we have that here.
We read two books this time, and you guys know I like endings often. I thought the ending of book two was awesome. Book three was fine, but I wanted to pause, if you guys don't mind, with the ending. That's really the middle of the reading we were doing for this week. So this is when Helena and Barry finally meet. And as we talked about, we knew they were eventually going to meet when you had two narrators.
We did not say that, Pam Bedore. You said this is kind of like a romance where we have two narrators and then they meet. But this isn't a romance, so I don't know if they're going to meet. They met, Pam Bedore.
I was confident they would meet. I can't believe I said that, but I'm sure you have the tape to prove it. Like what I was saying is that there's like a romance element to this sci-fi slash thriller slash detective. And so we get it. So at the end of book two, we see Helena through Barry's eyes first. And I love when writers do that. We don't know she's only 5 feet tall and she has red hair because she hasn't been talking about her own appearance in her narration. So the end of book two is kind of great.
So Barry's in the middle of about to do some big action against this hotel. And he's about to go in. He's about to make the phone call to make all of this happen. And Helena comes running up to him and tells him, you can't do this. Don't do this. I've seen this happen. It doesn't go well.
Right. And he says, are you a mind reader? No. Then how could you possibly know what happened to me? You told me. I've never seen you before in my life. You told me in the future, 4 months from now. He lowers the pistol, his brain twisting itself in knots. You used that chair? She looks up into his eyes with an intensity that sends a cool electricity down his spine. Ooh, romance, guys. I invented the chair. Who are you? Helena Smith. And if you go into Slade's building with Gwen, it will lead to the end of everything. Da da da. The book two. Okay, so that's such a fascinating little piece because, okay, it brings up that romance that we kind of saw coming out of that dual narration. The cool electricity down your spine. Whew. that's the little like attraction between these two. But also, she seems hyperbolic, but we know that it's not. If you do this, that leads to the end of everything, i.e. this timeline is over. And so it's a great, I think it's a great ending.
That is a great, this is why
first
this is
meeting an, between these two characters.
This is the episodic nature of this. This certainly would make a great miniseries or season.
And we haven't talked about this yet, but this book has been optioned by Netflix for a movie and multiple TV series. Multiple series.
Oh, from, interesting.
Uh-huh, from the mind of Shonda Rhimes, who is really good at making these sort of stories that have that romance element and that psychological element and melding the two. I really look forward to what's going to come from that.
All right, so just to clarify, are you saying like the Marvel Universe where like there's the Captain America movie and the Iron Man movie and the Thor movie, and eventually they kind of all show up together?
Yes, that is what I believe they have planned for this story, and I really look forward to it.
You can see that. You can unpack these, and you could follow one character through their journey, and then eventually they arrive at the part where they all get together.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
It's funny because if Robert J. Sawyer was going to study something like this, he would have a whole bunch of little stories, a bunch of little vignettes that people would read in the newspapers or whatever. Because FMS could affect all different kinds of people in all kinds of different ways. But Crouch really sticks with those two main characters that you can easily imagine developing the concept in a million different directions.
Oh, yeah.
When the building arrives in New York City, we do get a little bit of that, where the news person suddenly has the same flood of memory and is very disoriented, doesn't know what's happening. And we hear that people across the country and indeed around the world, because of New York City being such an icon for the world, we do have a little shadow of what could be there.
Do I remember properly that there was nosebleeds, right? There was something physical going on, uh-huh, along with this mental change.
Like, as in all of these thoughts are being pushed into your brain and there's a physical bleeding from your nose. And here's the thing, Chip. I had a nosebleed yesterday and it freaked me out.
Did you also get many new memories?
I don't think so, but I don't know. Maybe I did.
But the nosebleed is so cinematic too, right? So like you always get nosebleeds when like it's the perfect way in a movie,
yeah,
to show like, ooh, something bad has happened to a bunch of people. Nosebleeds.
The metaphor for something's happened in their brain. Yeah.
I think that's called the aha moment or the Gesundheit moment. You never know.
Oh boy.
German philosopher Chip Hessenflohn.
So one thing I think is really interesting, and this is typical in science fiction, of course, is that you have the main character experiencing something good. He was able to go back, save his daughter from death, from untimely death, at age 16, and now continue to live out his life with his daughter in it. So his life is so much better. And he has the opportunity. Remember the night that she went out to the Dairy Queen to meet her friends? He hopes he said, I love you, sweetie, but he knows he doesn't, right?
And we didn't talk about this last week, but remember when I said that's what I tell my children to say every time they leave somebody that they love, that should be the last words. And Blake Crouch wrote that in this book where he thought that was the last words he said to his daughter, hoped that was true, but finds out that nope, he said some inane thing about the
baseball game he was watching.
Nah.
Exactly. So from his perspective, things look good. Like, this is a great way to go back and change things. But of course, you know, that's not where a science fiction novel goes with the new technology. We've created this new technology that makes everything better. And so from Helena's perspective, we get her accusing Slate of using the chair super destructively. And I think it's really interesting how Slate reacts to her accusation. He says, yes, it will be destructive at first, like all progress. Just as the industrial age ushered in two world wars, just as Homo sapiens supplanted the Neanderthal. But would you turn back the clock on all that comes with it? Could you? Progress is inevitable and it's a force for good. And so pause and think about that.
That's crazy philosophy. That's uh-huh. certainly, it's like someone saying, hey, listen, the Depression's great because, you know, it cleans out everything. Or the going to war is great because it destroys everything. We got to rebuild it. That is false logic, in my opinion.
The war analogy is the one that I've heard the most. Is what we need to boost the economy today is a good war, because then we can get back to work. Ugh, no!
Frederick Bassat, the economist, he addressed this a long time. It's a broken glass analogy. The idea that just because you broke the glass and someone sits there and goes, oh, you got to replace it. And think of all the activity, economic activity that is generated from having to replace this piece of broken glass. Well, what you're not seeing is all the things that those resources could be used elsewhere. And they could easily be as good or better. Mm-hmm. So you're giving up all that to replace something that's, you know, temporary.
Now, here's what Slate would say to you, my dear friend. He says that to Barry right after he touches the entry wound on his shoulder after Barry shoots him. He says, you want to talk about destructive? How about being locked in our little fishbowls in this joke of an existence imposed on us by the limits of our primate senses? Life is suffering. It doesn't have to be. Why should you be forced to accept your daughter's death when you can change it? Why shouldn't a dying man go back to his youth with full wisdom and knowledge instead of gasping out his last hours in agony? Why let a tragedy unfold when you could go back and prevent it? What you're defending isn't reality. It's a prism, a lie.
Gosh, I'm thinking, was it Peterson? Who is the guy from Canada that's the controversial guy? Because he was making a similar argument where that life is suffering. And yes, your happiness is the reprieve from that. The idea that you somehow, that suffering is the reality, and your happiness, your glimpse of hope, your glimpse of this idea of experiencing something that's joyful, that is the release of that, the separation of reality and what your normal existence is.
Let's talk about Buddhism for a minute. The first rule of Buddhism is life is suffering. That is the truth of our reality. It's not life can be suffering. It's not life might be suffering. Life is suffering.
Isn't there that your Catholic background too, Steve?
No. My Catholic background is, I'm sorry for all the suffering that I caused you. I'm really, truly sorry for everything that I've done to you that made you suffer. I will atone for my suffering that I have enthralled you with. Life is suffering is one of the four noble truths. And the idea that we can avoid suffering is doomed for failure. You can't avoid suffering. Life is suffering. So the idea of this magical box that can send you back in time, you're not going to avoid suffering. You're just going to find different suffering.
That was the Pixar's Inside Out, when we talked about emotions, and they tried so hard to avoid sadness. But sadness ultimately allowed you to experience the more joyful moments, or even recognize the more joyful moments. Mm-hmm. So they kind of, they all play part of your life.
Buddhism.
And utopia, right? That's at the center of the utopian vision, is that that's the problem with the paradox of utopia, that the good place is always no place, is that without the understanding of unhappiness, we can't really experience happiness. And without death, we can't fully enjoy life. So these are, you know, very familiar philosophical notions.
We've talked about that a lot of times. The best gift that a human has is the idea that one day they will stop existing, and they have to work today toward whatever it is that they think is the right path.
Their bad ideas get to die with them too.
Mm-hmm.
And within Recursion, of course, Blake has these 11 years where his daughter is alive and his marriage doesn't end in divorce, as is so common after the death of a child. However, he and his wife do drift apart, despite the fact that his daughter is with them. And when they hit the place in the timeline where he went back and they're all flooded with memories of that other timeline, Megan can't process it. She can't process her own death. And like 10% of people who suffer from quote unquote FMS, she commits suicide.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that interesting? So something, certainly an accident, not something that you're in control over, later on becomes something that she absolutely takes control of. Mm-hmm. And she chooses the same action. The results were the same. This is an amazing sort of revelation.
And the divorce thing, the idea that the two of them did not work well together as husband and wife. And when the daughter was killed in the first timeline, that broke their marriage in a way that was irrevocable. But in this alternative where he gets to live those 11 years with his daughter alive, it just takes longer for them to acknowledge that this marriage is broken because their daughter is there as a buffer to their tensions. He says that very clearly. Mm-hmm. We didn't get a divorce, not because of you, but at the same time, you were the factor that kept us from really not getting along. We love you so much that we stayed together to be with you. It's an amazing look at relationships here. This is a story about relationships. This is a story about how Barry and Helena will have this romance that we see coming from this section where he has these feelings that he doesn't know where they're coming from because there's the magic of this consciousness.
It's electricity in his spine, Steve. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. And, you know, we've read time travel novels before. We know there's always a price. We know that when you cheat death, you don't just get away with it.
Life is suffering.
We know it.
It's even when you're given the mulligan, the do-over, this a chance of making it better. Isn't that the sadness of that is maybe you're not fully realizing what that really means. Mm-hmm. And those around you certainly have no concept of what that really means because it's your reality. It's not theirs.
Until that flood of memory comes back. And this is where the science fiction is different from anything that we've read before. Blake Crouch gives us this idea of your consciousness goes back in time, does whatever you do differently in this alternative timeline, and then the moment that you leaped back, every one of those grayed out false memories comes back to everybody who was involved with all of it.
And that's one of the questions I had about Slate having many, many, many timelines. Isn't he doing that for like everybody? So I felt like that was, I didn't know if that was like a writer issue. Like,
no, that's a time traveler issue. If you are a time traveler, let's just go with this for a second.
Sure. Do we know a time traveler?
Let's just say you have a large scarf and some curly hair. Maybe a number cut, Steve.
Here are the rules if you are a time traveler. Don't change much. Slade says to the people who are doing this time traveling, you can make small changes, but don't make any massive waves of change because, yes, that will go against the mission, whatever it is that he has in mind for this to happen. And when the guy builds this massive building at the edge of Central Park and the world sees it and the world has blood trickling down their nose because they have all of these memories, he has that guy killed because he did not follow the rules.
But because he's interacting with Helena all the time, don't you think it's kind of odd that she doesn't have like 30 different timelines? Just saying.
Maybe she does.
Didn't mention it to us in her narration.
No, I think Pam is smarter than us, Chip. Newsflash, by the way, Pam is smarter than us. But yeah, you're right. There might be a writer issue there where she is not telling us about all of these alternative timelines that she was involved with. Now, she did make a choice to leave Slade and to go out into the wilds of Canada where she hung out with the moose and the maple syrup. That's all I know about Canada, Pam. Is there more than moose and maple syrup?
No, you covered the main points. Beavers.
There's Mounties.
Oh, no!
Canada is the only country that has a police officer as one of its key national symbols.
Oh. It's a police state.
It actually tells you a lot about Canada.
It's a police state. So she leaves and goes out into the furthest place she can think of to be away from any of the effects. So maybe she wasn't affected by anything that Slade did because she was not directly connected to him for that long period of time.
Just saying.
Okay, fine. Your whole argument is, I'm just saying. Okay, fine.
There's plenty of explanations, and I'm hoping we're going to get one in book 4 or 5 on this topic. Because it seems to me like that's a real loose end of like, what's everyone else doing while Slade's experiencing many, many lifetimes? What's everyone else's memories and timelines experiencing? But I'm hoping that will be answered as we read on.
Oh.
Feeling that it's just sitting there, like, not answered. But anyway.
I don't want to give you any spoilers, Pam, because Chip and I did read this a year ago, and I'm hoping that Chip has good memory syndrome, GMS, and remembers the ending of this book.
That would be a negative, Steve.
Oh, good. That's even better. Because the ending of this book is spectacular, is the best awesome. Word that I have for it. It is... on the grandest scale that you can imagine, Blake Crouch spells out the consequences of this action to the nth degree.
Wonderful.
And I love it. And I look forward to all of you getting to that ending.
Steve, how do we prepare for next week?
All right. So next week we are going to read through book 4 of Recursion by Blake Crouch. That is the 4th of the 5 books. We'll get to the ending the week after this. But for this week, stick to book 4. It's hard, isn't it? It's hard to stop in the middle of the story because the story is so intriguing. You want to get to the next chapter, don't you?
This is just a lovely, lovely race. Every chapter is, and I shouldn't say chapter, they're just books. Just read this book.
Yeah, I've been really struggling to stop. And I'm, yes, I know that I'll read book 4 today or maybe tomorrow, and then I'll have to wait for 6 days to meet with you guys.
And we'll just be texting each other for 6 days. Oh my goodness, I can't believe that happened. Chip, did your mom get to book 2 and 3?
That is a negative because I'm the one. We didn't drive anywhere this last week. But yeah, she wants to finish this up. And I should just give it to her and let her read it because she's absolutely enjoying it. And I think anyone who enjoys an adventure story, a time travel story, an alternate reality, what is reality type story, would really enjoy this.
I agree. That's why I brought it to the book club. I don't know, Chip. I think we have enough information to survive another week. What do you think?
Only if we can come back next week, Steve.
What do you think, Pam? What's going on next week?
Can't wait for book 4.
We don't know what's going to happen next week, do we? We have no idea. We'll have to go through the timeline linearly to find out.
Or we could always go back to last week.
No, let's not. Let's go forward. I hope that all of you are reading this book along with us, enjoying it as much as we are. I hope that you are getting to the deep philosophical thinking that goes along with this particular science fiction book. We would love to hear from you. Give us a call or a text. Our phone number is 805-410-4867. Our website is sandwichesatirregularhours.com. Our email is sandwichesatirregularhours@gmail.com. We're on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. We're on Apple Podcasts and Spotify and YouTube. I want to thank you again for listening to Sandwiches at Irregular Hours. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Essenflug.
And I'm Pam Bedore.
We'll see you in the future. Or maybe we already did.